The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm playing the role of Eric Metaxas. This is a bunker video. We're all in our various bunkers. But the actual show today, in a couple of minutes, we're going to have our interview with Greg Laurie talking about Johnny Cash. He's got a story about Johnny Cash and an ostrich. You won't believe. It is sheer lunacy. It's an encore, but even if you heard it before, it's unbelievable. And it's in our gorgeous studios where we're wearing makeup. I'm wearing my well-fitted horsehair wig, which is at the dry cleaners. I'll probably never see it again. Anyway, James and Chris and Albin, you're in your own bunkers. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with the group?
Well, at some point I'm going to share Sadar's radar, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
What do you mean at some point? People are champing at the bit. They're dying.
Okay, and now time for Sadar's radar. Well, here's my thing. You know, now with the coronavirus, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of frustration, a lot of people getting annoyed and angry. But I'm starting to see a lot of people, even in the condo where we live, the neighbors helping neighbors. I mean, they're staying 6 feet apart, but they're doing nice things for each other. And there are still people out there that think America was never great. There are still people that say that. But but this is what I say to them. Would a country that was never great ever have come up with Great Garlou? Look at Great Garlou. When I was a kid, that was the number one prize or toy that kids wanted when I was growing up. Yeah. It cost about $30 back then, which was about, you know, $150. But in today,
Albin, you're freaking me out, Albin. What is that thing?
Great Garlou. You can make him. He can walk around. He can knock over little buildings and toys and stuff. Look at this. My twin brother bought this for me finally at a garage sale. It cost him $100. He doesn't work right, but Great Garlou.
But Albin, Great Garlou looks demonic.
Well, he looks a little scary, but he's really a nice guy.
He looks good. I think he's come as an angel of light and fooled you. I think it's demonic.
I see him with a halo over his head. But if you go online, there's a 60-second ad for Great Garlou. You'll see a black and white 60-second ad from the 60s.
You know what would be real sweet, Albin, now and in the future? If you'd give us some stinking context. What is this thing? What are you talking about?
He's a remote control robot from the 60s. He was the best remote control robot.
You're telling me that's a remote control robot?
Yeah.
But it doesn't work now?
No, he's broken. His controls are all broken. But that's what he was, Great Garlou.
You weren't going to show us those controls. This is why I'm here. I'm trying to help people understand how amazing that thing is, and also that it's demonic, and we rebuke it.
Hey, I think demonic's a little strong. He just looks like he has a bit of consternation and a slight learning disability.
Is that what you think? You're such a, you know, Chris, you're so sweet.
Yeah.
And thank you for saving me.
He said, no, you really, Chris Himes, people, when they get to know you, they realize you're so such a sweet person. And I'll say this as well. Such a phony. You make me sick.
Yeah. You're
the phoniest. Okay. So seriously though, Albin, so the great Garlou, I'm assuming there was something really valid you wanted to communicate. And I want to make sure you get a chance to really bring it home for our listeners and viewers.
No, there are so many great things about America, like the Great Lakes, right? And Great Garlou.
Oh, I see.
The Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Why does the Great Garlou have that grimace on his face? And why does he look reptilian? Is that a particularly positive thing about him?
Well, keep in mind, back in the 60s, there were a lot of those A-bomb kind of movies, you know, where things got distorted from the bomb. Yeah,
right.
Godzilla and that sort of thing.
And he's wearing a loincloth. I dare say, well, I don't know what's beneath that leopard skin.
Well, Tarzan was
very
also
a freaky creature.
Tarzan was also big back in the 60s. It was a little combination of squad.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm really I'm glad you've shared that with America, because we need hope. And what could give us more hope than a reptilian, nearly demonic monster that knocks down buildings? Thank you, Albin.
You're welcome.
Just a sweet soul. You and Chris, you make me sick. Okay. I forgot to mention, we are all talking about what we're watching these days. And Albin, you had some stuff you wanted to share. But before I let you share that, I just want to say last night, Suzanne and I, we've already seen No Safe Spaces. That's our buddy Dennis Prager's film about free speech. And I want to encourage people. It's a great film. You need to see it. Force your teenagers to see it. It is absolutely, it's very entertaining. It's got Adam Carolla and tons of interesting guests that you'll be shocked at all the celebrities. But No Safe Spaces is very important. So please check it out. But last night we watched Northanger Abbey. It's a Jane Austen novel. I think it's her final novel. And we watched a 2007 version with Felicity Jones, and it was really wonderful. There are some things that we're finding on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime that are just terrific. Jane Austen adaptations, Dickens adaptations, but that's what we watched last night. But Albin, you had some things you wanted to share. Well,
this is a great time for guys, I got to tell you, because if you're in the same house with your wife or your spouse, whatever, if a guy's there and he's not allowed to get near his wife 6 feet apart, he could say to her, now you go in your room and you watch your movies, and I'll go in my room and I'll watch my movies. So I put together a list, a very short list of guy movies that are my favorites. Gladiator, okay, Midnight Run, okay, and Tombstone, I'm Your Huckleberry. In fact, he's got a book out that's the name.
Ooh, who's got a book out?
Who's the actor, the main actor? I forget. He plays Doc Holliday. I forget. But he says
Val Kilmer?
Yeah, Val Kilmer. He has a biography out. We're trying to get him for the show, believe it or not. And also, here's the greatest guys. If you like love stories for a guy, my favorite love story for a guy is Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. And since we're all kind of living through a Groundhog Day, every day is the same.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day.
Well, the only thing is that guys don't like love stories, Albin.
Yeah, but this one's okay.
The only love story guys have ever really loved is some episodes of the Three Stooges involve love stories. And then, of course, who can forget all those Godzilla movies, the Smog Monster, Mothra. Those are really wonderful love stories.
Hey, Eric, when Miss Schwarzenegger was on and she was leaving the studio, did she give any intimation that she would be back? And if so, did she say?
Yes, she said to me, hey, Eric, I'll be back.
That's
and
nice.
It really freaked me out because she looked a lot like her dad. She's very pretty, but in that moment, she looked like her dad. No, you know what she did on the way home, on the way out? This is no joke, because she was just so nice, everything like that. And, you know, I'm shaking people's hands because this is before the corona thing.
Right.
But she actually gave me a hug. And I kind of thought, you know, she's like a big celebrity. And she was so sweet. You know, there's certain people that are just genuine and they're really sweet. And she is one of them. Either that, or she's the biggest phony, even bigger phony than you guys. But I don't think she was so sweet. She was so sweet.
I told my wife this morning, the last person's hand, I'm not kidding, that I shook, that wasn't, you know, her hand or whatever, was Katherine Schwarzenegger's Pratt. I shook her hand right before she left.
And you haven't washed it since, and you've given coronavirus to thousands of people.
Look at that hand.
Look at that,
beautiful.
Jeremy, gosh, you're like Typhoid Mary. You're patient zero. Okay, what else do we have to talk about? Because in a minute we have our buddy Greg Laurie coming up. He talks, this is not a joke. He tells a story about how an ostrich, a vicious ostrich, ended up leading Johnny Cash to faith in Jesus Christ. People think I'm making that up. Listen, in the next half hour,
yeah, true,
listen to this program and you will see it's one of the freakiest stories. This was in a very few ostriches have an evangelistic anointing. But I think that that's biblical. And anyway, you watch it. We're going to be out of time. Don't forget Food for the Poor. We still have like a week to go. Anybody who gives between now and next week, you can win a grand prize. We announced our grand prize winner, Celeste Johnson. I think we're out of time. I hate being out of time because it's so much fun. God bless all of you. God bless you and stay in touch with us. You can reach us at ericmetaxas.com or metaxastalk.com.
Everyone wishes for silver and gold. How do you measure its worth? Just by the pleasure it gives.
Hey, folks, that's Burl Ives. And anybody who knows Burl Ives knows that he played in some movies. He played a really nasty character. So when he's singing Silver and Gold, I'm thinking, you're not fooling me, Burl. I know what you're capable of. I'm talking today in the studio. I have my dear friend, Pastor Greg Laurie from Orange County, California in New York City. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here. I've got a scarf, so I'm officially in New York. It's cold.
Well, you think New Yorkers don't wear those scarves?
Well,
we would never, ever wear a scarf like that. I can't believe that you come on this program. You must be writing a book about Liberace.
Oh, my goodness.
I got you.
Okay, you did. Californians who think they're being New Yorkers do wear scarves.
Really?
And it's good to be here.
Okay.
Not self-conscious. Should I take it off?
I think it's...
You said wear it before
I think
we
it's
started.
I like it, but
you said leave it so you could mock me. That was always the plan, wasn't it?
I don't think so, but now that you mention it, maybe part of my subconscious was planning that. But what is that, like velvet? What is that? It's like crushed velvet?
Yeah.
Was there a sale in the women's department? No, come on. Come on. Get serious,
yes.
Greg. Get serious. Look, there's so much I want to talk to you about. First of all, I don't want to forget. We have talked on this program about your new book on Johnny Cash,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
But I want my audience to know, because people don't listen to every show. Mm-hmm. You wrote a book about Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon, talking about the Christian faith of Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get to meet Johnny Cash?
No, I didn't. I came very close, but unfortunately, I did not. I just did. I had a genealogist to contact me recently, and he told me, and I didn't even know this when I wrote the book, I'm a distant cousin of Johnny Cash. My great-grandmother's maiden name was Cash, so we're connected to the Cash
you
clan.
You are related to Johnny Cash?
Well, I always wear black. Maybe this
you
is...
You do.
This is the subconscious thing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Suddenly, that scarf doesn't look as effeminate as most people would think.
Wow. But, you know, here's a novel thought. Give cash for Christmas. Okay, and I'm talking about the book.
The book.
You know, when you're thinking about what can I give to my non-believing friend, this would be a great gift, especially for a non-believing man. Because, you know, Cash was a man's man. He was, you know.
I literally did this yesterday with your Steve McQueen book.
Yeah.
There are people listen. There are all kinds of different people listen to this program. And I think it's part of my calling in life, God's calling in my life, to help bridge this ridiculous divide between the secular and the sacred.
Yes.
We have these amazing figures.
Yeah.
Kanye West is the most recent. Bob Dylan. Johnny Cash. And Steve McQueen, about whom you wrote a beautiful book, who are vintage American icons,
yes,
who were dramatically serious Christians, love Jesus Christ, And you don't hear that in the popular culture. No. And your books bridge that divide. And so I gave the Steve McQueen book yesterday to a friend who's really not on the same page as we are theologically. But I thought, who doesn't love Steve McQueen?
Yeah, that's right. I just saw that film Once Upon a Time in America. And they have a Steve McQueen character in there, a guy playing Steve McQueen. And, you know, he and I just was flipping through some Man's magazine. There's an ad featuring McQueen. Then I listened to I saw a commercial on TV yesterday, a backdrop of a Johnny Cash song playing. So these guys transcend time. And both of them were the personification of cool guys. McQueen was known as the king of cool.
Right.
And Cash was called the godfather of cool. So to me, what is the coolest thing? What is cool? Cool to me is being your own person, not marching in lockstep with the culture, thinking for yourself. Cool to me is a person that stands by his convictions. And of course, to me, the ultimate rebellion in today's culture is being a follower of Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. Spoken like an evangelist, and I completely agree. So Johnny Cash, he was the ultimate rebel.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that he was considered the godfather of cool?
Yeah.
You know, you probably don't know this. I'm considered the redheaded stepson of cool.
Yes, I've heard that.
I don't know what that means, but I like to
the
say
the red's
it.
Gone now, so yeah, more yes, the gray-headed stepson.
Well,
stepson
it's
of...
more like a redheaded, metaphorically speaking.
Oh.
You seem to appreciate these figures in culture in a way. And, you know, this is one of the reasons we're friends. I think part of the big problem with our culture is that we completely secularize everything. So when you discover, like, hey, Steve McQueen was a serious born-again believer at the end of his life, like really serious,
full conversion.
Most people can't even believe it.
Now, I'm actually thinking of writing another book. I haven't committed to it yet, but I want to do a chapter on a lot of...
Did you hear that? My phone is turned off, and it's still making noises.
Wow.
Sorry about that. I apologize. Siri is dead to me. Go ahead.
Siri is dead. So I was thinking of doing a chapter on different people that professed faith in Jesus Christ. Johnny Cash, Steve McQueen. How about this one? Alice Cooper. I've interviewed him. In fact, my interview is on my YouTube channel. Very committed Christian. Here's another one. John Lennon. I'm not saying John Lennon was a Christian, but I'm telling you this.
I know this story, and I've been dying for somebody to come on this program and at least get into it a little bit, because I happen to know a little bit of this. Go ahead, John Lennon.
What I've heard, and I haven't researched this, and I would research it more, but yeah, I mean, we know about Bob Dylan. Now, we don't know where Bob Dylan is at today spiritually, but there was a moment in time when he made an open profession of faith in Christ, released three what we might call gospel-type records, and not unlike Kanye. What Bob Dylan did in his day, Kanye is doing in our day. But coming back to John, when he was living here in New York City at the Dakota with Yoko Ono, the story is told that John was watching television and saw a film about Jesus on, I think it was CBN, and he made a commitment to Christ and called and asked for prayer. And it appeared, and what I read in a biography of him by a person who knew him very well at the time, was that he wrote a couple of Christian songs, was very excited about his newfound faith. And as the story is told, Yoko wasn't very supportive of it, and he didn't stay with it. But here's my point. Look, only God knows who a real believer is and who a real believer is not. But when someone makes a profession of faith, that interests me. And who knows, and tragically, the way John died right here in this city is so heartbreaking. But who knows if in the back of that police car, as he was being driven to the hospital, and the officer said, "Do you know who you are?" He knew. He said, "I'm John Lennon." You know, if that faith was real and he turned to the Lord in the end, just like the thief on the cross, he would have been welcomed into heaven. I think there'll be three surprises when we get to heaven. Some of the people we thought would be there won't be there. Some of the people we never thought would be there will be there. And thirdly, we'll be there. So God knows, but I'm interested when public figures make open professions of faith in Christ. So there's a number of people. Chuck Norris is an outspoken Christian. The list goes on with a lot of surprising names that I thought I would explore the faith, or at least the professions of faith, of notable people.
I've thought of writing the same book, but it'd be way easier for me if you wrote the book and we just talked about it on my radio program.
Okay, I like that.
Now, did you know about Margaret Mead?
No.
Very few people know this. In fact, I've never heard anyone except the man who told me the story, but that very late in life, she was dying. And I have the story. Mm-hmm. I think I write it in my next book. I think it's going to be included in my next book. But She came to faith at the end of her life. One of the most dramatic. I mean, Margaret Mead was like, you know, like Freud, Hugh Hefner, mm-hmm. Kinsey, like this major mm-hmm. figure of secularist, libertine sexuality in the culture. And I got to tell you something. She absolutely, at the end of her life, gave her life mm-hmm. to Jesus. Nobody knows that. Nobody knows that this evangelist for free mm-hmm. sex, who did tremendous damage mm-hmm. in the 20th century, at the end of her life, decided to put her faith in Jesus. And that mm-hmm. story has yet to be told. So that I love this kind of thing, and I think it's important. Mm-hmm. It's cultural apologetics.
Yeah, it is.
We need to do it.
Well, also Rosa Parks. I met Rosa Parks on a bus, and it was we were doing a tour back a long time ago. She wrote a book, and I wrote a book at the same time at the now defunct Word Books, and she wrote a book about her faith in Christ. And so they did this sort of little bus tour.
Zondervan.
Well, I think it was Word Books.
I think she wrote her book. I know she wrote a book for Zondervan yeah. on her faith, but whatever. The point is she was a Christian.
I just met her, and of course I knew her as a civil rights icon.
Right.
And we're in this bus going from the headquarters over to a bookstore for sort of an appearance, and I found it ironic. I'm talking to Rosa Parks on a bus. But here's my point. So many significant people in our history made such a change. We could go back to leaders like Abraham Lincoln, even George Washington.
Absolutely.
You know, how they were influenced by their faith, and we want to sort of edit that out these days. And significant people that have changed our country and our world were motivated by their faith in Jesus Christ and pop culture, historical people, presidents, you know, even, you know, the list goes on, the Queen of England.
Had a
serious encounter with Christ and was very influenced by the ministry of Billy Graham. A lot of these stories are not told.
Can we imagine? I mean, it's just, this is why we're friends, Greg, because I am absolutely as fascinated as you are by this. And I have written many books. I mean, I write about Jackie Robinson. I write about Rosa Parks. Yeah, yes. I started to be an author some years ago. But I write about Rosa Parks. Yes. And people need to know these civil rights icons were motivated by Jesus.
That's
we'll
right.
be right back talking to Greg Laurie.
Let, your
Let me ask you a question.
Be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Hey, turn off that pagan nonsense. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, folks. Of course, I love Michael Jackson, and I like Santa. He was the Bishop of Myra. He was at the Council of Nicaea. Greg Laurie, my guest, you know about all this stuff, right?
I've heard about these stories about the real Santa Claus.
Saint Nick, yeah. Saint Nicholas was the Bishop of Myra, mm-hmm. and he was at the Council of Nicaea.
Wow.
And he got like in a fist fight over some part of doctrine with some. It's a famous story, but we're not going to go into that right now. I want to talk to you about so much. I want to talk to you about our friend Franklin Graham mm-hmm. and about this TBN special that I'm doing. But I want to talk to you about Jared Wilson. Jared Wilson was a young pastor at your church, Harvest, out in Orange County. And I met him a few times. I had the privilege of speaking with him just a few months ago at the Anaheim Angels Stadium at your big crusade. And then a couple weeks later, I heard the horrible news that he took his life. You wrote about it. Tell us about it. This is so painful for you because you knew him so well. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's still hard to believe it, that it actually happened. And when I heard the news, I was so shocked because here was a young man who openly admitted that he struggled with depression and mental illness. But he was on medication. He felt it was under control. And in fact, so much so, he was seeking to help other people who were struggling with it as well. He had a ministry. His wife carries it on today. Anthem of Hope is what it's called, to help people with these struggles. And one of Jared's messages was, it's okay to be depressed. You can be a Christian and have times of depression. You can be a Christian and struggle with the same things that people struggle with that are not believers. We wouldn't think it's strange if someone said, I have cancer and I'm receiving treatment.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
We wouldn't say to them, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Suck it up. Where's your faith? Read scripture. No, cancer, look, I have been public about this for many years. I've dealt with depression. And when we say depression, we're not talking about the blues. Yeah. We're not talking about I'm going through a bad time. Yeah. No. Clinical depression, it's like a toothache. It's not in your mind. It's a very real thing, and it's horrible. And some people suffer much more dramatically than others. I've never had suicidal thoughts. But, man, when it's bad, it is the worst. You wouldn't wish it on an enemy. It's horrible. And I didn't know that he struggled with that, and I just was—I was so sad when I heard this.
Well, in a moment of obvious weakness, he made the worst decision imaginable, and but you know, one of the things I said, and I was criticized for saying this, Eric, is I said that God will not judge us for the last thing we did in this on earth, but the last thing Jesus did on the cross. In other words, you know, I am a Christian and I'm saved. I mentioned earlier there'll be surprises in heaven. I'm going to heaven not because of what I've done for God. I'm going to heaven because of what God has done for me. And that's what Christmas is all about. Yes, it's about the birth of the baby in the manger in Bethlehem, but the baby was born to die that we might live. Jesus was born that we might be born again. He left his home in heaven that we might have a home in heaven. So that little babe came on a rescue mission. So my point was simply, as sad as this is, I certainly don't think it's the unforgivable sin. It's devastating to his family and loved ones, but I believe he's with the Lord. But I just would say to anybody right now watching this, listening to us, and I know the holidays can be a time when you have greater depression. Sometimes it's because, you know, Christmas is sort of hyped up in our mind and it doesn't live up to what I think are unrealistic expectations.
Right.
Sometimes it's because there's conflicts in your home. There maybe it's a broken home, a divorce. Maybe a loved one was with you last year that isn't with you this year. You know, 11 years ago, our oldest son, Christopher, died in an automobile accident. And, you know, every Christmas is loaded with memories. And so it's moments of happiness and sadness. And I would just say to anybody struggling with depression this time of the year, remember the essential message of Christmas. It's not let's shop till we drop. It's not let it snow. It's let us worship. That's what the wise men came to do. And remember this, the message of Jesus coming to this earth is Emmanuel, which means God is with us. So you're not alone. So turn to the Lord. It's not Christmas that's going to fill the hole in your life. It's Christ. Yeah. It's not presence under a tree. It's his presence in your life. So I would encourage people to lean into Jesus, and then it will be the merriest and the happiest of Christmas. It's not sort of the fake hyped up version that a lot of people get caught up in.
I tell you, I went to church yesterday and I was so moved by the worship.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, because I've been so busy lately, that sometimes just dragging yourself into a place like that where you're in the presence of God, you're in the presence of God's people who actually believe. It's not just some phony church where people just show up because, you know, that's the thing to do.
Yeah.
But boy, we need it. We're made to worship.
We're
made to stand in the presence of God. And if we don't do it, our hearts long for
it.
And I just want to say to people, go to any church and, you know, if the people don't greet you in the right way, forget about them. It's about Jesus.
That's
just go and hear the good news. It's the best news in the history of news. And I heard this horrible news about Jared Wilson and I read what you wrote about it, I thought to myself, there are a lot of really broken Pharisees out there, nasty people who, if you suggest that someone who committed suicide is in heaven, they would prefer to know that he's not. They have this joy of their theology, which makes them inhuman.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I don't want to tell people like, hey, if you kill yourself, you're definitely going to heaven. No, I don't want to say that because I don't want anyone to kill themselves thinking like, hey, this is a great move.
No.
It's the worst move you can make.
True.
But I think, my goodness, let's have a little grace with the social media. If you're having a thought, you don't have to express it.
Yes,
really and truly.
Yeah.
Are we out of time in this segment? We're out of time. We'll be right back, folks. I'm talking to my friend Greg Laurie. Don't go away.
I pray for you, pa-rum-pum-pum-pum. On my drum.
Yeah. comes Santa Claus, here comes Gene Autry. Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus.
That is Gene Autry.
I met him once.
You're kidding.
No, he was waiting for his luggage. He was an older gentleman at that point. No one was helping him. I recognized him. He had his little cowboy hat on. So I unloaded his luggage from him and said, it's an honor to meet you, Mr. Autry. And that was it. I should have told you I shared the gospel with him, but I didn't. But I at least unloaded his luggage.
As long as you, yes.
Nice guy.
That was the cup of water moment. Now, if he hadn't been wearing the cowboy hat, I don't think you would have known it was Gene Autry. Come on, be honest.
I recognize people all the time when I walk around.
You and I, this is why we're friends. We have the same bizarre gene. I can recognize a minor celebrity 40 years after their prime from the back of their head in a dark alley at 40 paces.
Perfect example. I'm getting off the plane at LAX. I've written this book on Johnny Cash. I just watched a documentary film about Cash featuring Kris Kristofferson. I'm walking to my car. I see this older man standing there. And from the back, I said, that looks like Kris Kristofferson. I walked around. It was him.
So from the back.
Yeah. So I showed him the book. I said, I've written a book about your friend, Johnny Cash. And I know that you guys are close. And this is about his spiritual life. And I sent a copy to Kris. And he wrote me back and said he was reading it. So, you know, it's I recognize people from behind.
I'm not too kidding. Elaine Stritch, remember the Broadway star? We had her biographer, Alexandra Jacobs, on this program recently. And I told the story then that I was jogging like in Central Park and I'm coming down Park Avenue and I look literally a block away. That's a 20th of a mile. I see a woman in a big coat from behind and I go, boom, Elaine Stritch. And it was. And I had a nice conversation with her. And how bizarre. Now, look, you just reminded me of something which I just forgot. That's bad.
What?
We were just talking about, Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't tell
another
you the story.
Another man who's made an open profession of faith, by the way.
Listen, no kidding. I was, I never go to the zoo, but I happened to
It's all happening at the zoo.
I happened to go to the zoo in Berlin because I actually had some free time when I was in Berlin and back in June. And I said, I haven't been to the zoo in like a million years. I want to go to the Hippo House. So I go to the Hippo House and I'm looking in the murky water, and one of the hippos kind of comes up to the glass and mouths, Kris Kristofferson. Actually, that's not true. No, that was in my dream. What actually happened is I'm looking at the hippos, and the hippos weren't doing anything exciting, and I thought, oh, well, forget it. So I turn around in the Hippo House, and there is Kris Kristofferson, and nobody recognized him. I mean, everybody's walking around. He just looks like some old guy standing there. And I thought, is this a dream? I'm in the Hippo House at the Berlin Zoo, and Kris Kristofferson happens to be in the Hippo House at the Berlin Zoo. So I went up and I spoke with him. He didn't say much. I think he was like a little confused to be accosted in the Hippo House.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine then sent me, and I've shared this on the air, a beautiful thing that must be from not too many years ago where he shares the story of coming to faith in this church. And you probably know this, okay? And then he sings one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, which he wrote.
Why Me, Lord?
Why Me, Lord?
Which was one of Steve McQueen's favorite songs after he came to faith. Here's an interesting thing. Ken Burns just did an incredible series on country music.
I saw a lot of
PBS.
It. I saw a lot of it.
They had a segment on Kris that was filmed recently, and he told the same story.
You're kidding.
Because I saw what you saw, and it looked like it was maybe 20 years old or so.
Yeah.
This was very recent. And so that's what I'm saying is, you know, no one is beyond the reach of God, Eric. I mean, we look at people, we say, oh, they would never come to faith. Look, anyone can, look, if God could reach Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who is known for his wickedness, if God could reach Saul of Tarsus, a bona fide Christian hunter and killer, then God can reach anybody. So someone's listening right now and say, oh, my husband will never come to faith, or this person never will, or that person never will. I say pray for them because the Lord may reach out to them.
Amen. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, when I heard the story of Kris Kristofferson talking about how moving this experience of coming to faith and then writing this gorgeous song. What a beautiful song.
Is.
Why Me, Lord?
Yeah.
I would love to think that I would be able to interview him at some point. I don't know how to reach these people, but I would just love to hear that story.
Wouldn't that be great?
To have it. Well, I pray about these things because these stories need to be told. I'm thrilled Ken Burns allowed him to tell it on PBS.
And it was rather lengthy, I have to admit. I was a bit surprised that they included it. It was like 8-9 minutes of him telling the story of his conversion.
Did he sing the song?
They went back to that song, Hurts, you know, Sunday Morning Coming Down, Me and Bobby McGee, classic. Made famous by Johnny Cash and Janis Joplin.
And George Jones does a version of Why Me, Lord, but I prefer the Kris Kristofferson version. It is so beautiful. It's so much I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about our mutual friend. Well, he's your friend, really. I met him through you. Franklin Graham. Mm-hmm. He was on this program.
Yes.
And he has been a supporter of this president, as we both have been. And he said, I think some of this impeachment stuff is demonic. And he said, I think that some of this impeachment stuff is almost demonic. And I, in my winsome way, said, almost demonic. You know, like it's demonic, right? Yeah. And the vitriol that came at us, because here's what people do, and this is where we are. We're living in the culture, and I say, let's all play by the same rules, folks. You can dislike whom you like. You can quote people, and they can apologize, but don't misquote people. People said that Franklin and I claimed that everyone who opposes this president is demonic.
Yeah.
I never said that.
Yeah.
I believe abortion is demonic.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean every pro-choice person in America is demonic. That, first of all, I find that whole idea to be unbiblical. People aren't demonic. That's just a stupid statement.
Yeah.
But that got out there, and it was repeated over and over and over and over. And people love repeating these things, even though they're not true, because they say, you know, it doesn't matter if it's not technically true. We hate these people, and they almost said that. But we didn't say that. And the reason we didn't say it is because we don't believe it.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, it's the first time I have been exposed to, you know, what people call fake news, where it comes out. Nobody gets your views on it. Nobody says, did you say, what did you say, or whatever. And it just goes and it gets repeated over and over and over. Even yesterday, this is like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. It's still being repeated in articles.
Yeah.
And I got an email from a prominent pastor. I wouldn't mention his name on the air, but it's Max Lucado. And he asked me, Eric, did you say this? That was a joke, by the way.
Yeah.
And I said, do you say this? Because people are thinking, if it's in the newspaper, you did say this, right? And I had to clarify to him. So I thought, since you're here, I want to mention that. We're living in weird times, folks. We need to give grace to our enemies, to our friends. We'll be right back with my friend Greg Laurie.
Lord, help me, Jesus, I've wasted it. So help me, Jesus, I know what I am.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do.
Oh, man. What do hippopotami have to do with the Eric Metaxas show? Well, Kris Kristofferson. What a crazy... I mean, these stories are so crazy. I'm sitting here with my friend Greg Laurie. Greg, your new book is Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. Your previous book, Steve McQueen and The Redemption... What was that?
Steve McQueen, The Redemption of an American Icon. And then Johnny Cash, The Salvation of an American Icon.
Right.
And then Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. And I'm writing a new one right now called Billy Graham, The Making of an American Icon. Because Billy, you know, the father of Franklin, obviously, is sort of the glue in the story between McQueen and Cash. And I think he's maybe the coolest cat of all time that isn't understood in that way. We see him as the patriarchal figure on Mount Rushmore, and he was that prophet-like person in our nation's history. But he was a very innovative, very creative, way ahead of his time in areas of media and other ways. With the gospel, like no one has ever been before. So I want to, in having gotten to know him quite well, I want to tell a different side of his story.
I absolutely love it. Well, we're talking about so many different things. I wanted to tell you, this is the we'll lock the doors and keep you for another 10 minutes. But before we go, I want my audience to know, and I might as well tell you, that these are not my real teeth.
Oh, wow.
No, just kidding. These are my teeth. But what I did want to tell you is that I can't stop joking because of you, Greg. I'm blaming you.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, but I want to say that I am so excited that TBN allowed me to do a one-hour Christmas special. I don't even know if have I shared this with you?
Well, I've seen little snippets of it.
Let me tell you something. People won't believe their eyes. You'll have to watch it a second time to make sure that it wasn't the cough medicine messing with your head, because there's some really, truly crazy stuff.
Looking forward to seeing it.
Albin, who's standing over there, he plays a Dickensian street urchin in one scene, and he plays elves in two other scenes. We said, who can we get? What tiny person? And that's the best we could do. He's, he's 6 foot three.
Yes.
But we have the Duck Dynasty folks are involved in it. We have my friend Melanie Penn, incredible Christian singer. She's really spectacular, not as well known beyond New York, but wow. And we have our friend Victoria Jackson.
Yeah, Saturday Night
She's
Live.
In two things with me. We, you know, there's comedy sketches and stuff, but it is so crazy. But the opening, you, my friend, we might have to save this for the next segment, but you play a role in something that happened, because I wanted to do a crazy opening, almost like, you know, remember they used to do the openings with the Oscars, that like it was like a crazy thing.
Yes.
I wanted to do something like that where I am singing Step Into Christmas, which is the Elton John song.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
But we were denied the rights to that song. And something happened where we were able to get the rights, and you're dimly related to that. I probably shouldn't share it on the air, but somebody who goes to your church is involved with Elton John, and not romantically, musically. And I got to tell you, it was one of those like things that I would say it rises to the level of miracle if you know the details.
Mm-hmm.
But the beginning has us, Albin and me and a whole bunch of us, on the top of a double-decker bus going down Fifth Avenue, lip-syncing to Step Into Christmas. There's stuff you won't believe it till you see it, but it's on TBN, and it's going to be, I hope, this weekend. But you got to check your local listings. TBN is on every dial in America. We're out of time in this hour, but we'll be right back for another segment with my friend Greg Laurie. Don't go away.